98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, the 4 o'clock reset. Brought to you by Collins Comfort Masters, proud home services partner of the Arizona Cardinals. 4 o'clock reset.
All right, here we go with the top stories of the day presented to you at 4 o'clock every day here on the Burns and Gambo show. And we start with the story that Eric just had in his SportsCenter update a moment ago. And Gambo, I know you've got more details on the Coyotes. Might be close to finding their new temporary home in the Valley. According to reports, the ASU multipurpose arena that is still under construction could be their temporary home for the next 3 to 4 years, depending on how long it takes for the franchise to find a permanent home. A lot of people are talking about a potential arena site in Tempe. What do you know about this and whether they're going to play there or not?
Listen, I think one of their preferences was Chase Field, but because of the amount of dates that already booked at Chase Field and the cost, the crazy cost associated with putting ice in, then taking it out, then putting it back in, then taking it out. And they would have to do that so many times that it just would not work at Chase Field. That was definitely an option for them, but the cost of always removing the ice and putting it back because of the dates that they have booked for Chase Field, that no longer became a viable option for them. ASU is an option, even though it's a 5,000-seat arena, but we're talking about the Coyotes having to put upwards of $10 million or more into things like an NHL-style locker room. They could not use the locker rooms that ASU would be using for their team. They would have to build state-of-the-art locker rooms per the NHL that would be required. So that would be very costly. There's a lot of cost involved, but it's going to be a beautiful arena. It's all the seats would be in the lower bowl. You can make those tickets prime tickets for people that want to go. Nobody would have a bad seat in the entire house. So it definitely is an option, but it's going to be a costly option because of the amount of money that they would have to put into that arena themselves.
I don't know what number blows me away more, the 5,000 seats or the $10 million to make it an NHL-style locker room.
There are several things that they would have to do. One of those things would be NHL-style locker rooms they would have to have. They would not have... You know, they would not have the New York Rangers coming here or the Colorado Avalanche coming here and going into a college locker room. That would not work.
Man, those are both staggering numbers to me. They really are. As the Coyotes continue to try to navigate their future, it's always been so dicey for them. Arizona Cardinals VP of Personnel Adrian Wilson being targeted by the Jacksonville Jaguars potentially as their next general manager. According to reports from Chris Porter of First Coast News and Cardinals digital content correspondent Mike Jarecki, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers offensive coordinator Byron Leftwich is the Jags' target to be their next head coach. And according to reports, he wants Adrian Wilson to be his general manager. The Jags already have a general manager in Trent Baalke. So a little bit of a potential power play going on in Jacksonville right now.
Yeah, Mike Jarecki very dialed in. So, you know, Mike's very close with a lot of those guys. I think he would have a lot of information on A-Dub and what may be happening there. But it doesn't sound like the Jaguars are targeting Adrian Wilson. It sounds like Byron Leftwich is targeting Adrian Wilson.
That's a good call. Yeah. There's a distinction there because Byron Leftwich sounds like they want to hire Byron Leftwich. And by the way, for what it's worth, Leftwich is also now, according to reports, going to interview with the New Orleans Saints for their head coaching job. Longtime Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback Ben Roethlisberger made it official today, announcing his retirement in a video that he sent out via his Twitter account and social media. 18 seasons, 2 Super Bowls, countless team records, and for sure a spot in the Hall of Fame awaiting Big Ben, Gambo.
Yeah, what an incredible career. I mean, just an incredible career. And now Pittsburgh will move on after having him for so many years. And obviously, a lot of, you know, when you think about Ben Roethlisberger, it's very hard not to think about the pain and the suffering that Cardinal fans had when he hit Santana Moss in the corner. Who did he hit?
Santonio Holmes.
Why did I say Santana Moss?
Yeah, I don't know.
Santonio Holmes in the corner of the end zone for that touchdown.
Yeah, that's
Jeez.
Okay. Yesterday I said Donovan Mitchell. I meant to say Donovan McNabb.
Listen, Chris Paul. You know, listen, we're all getting a little bit older. Me, you, and Chris Paul. Chris Paul called Ish Smith last night. So, it happens.
It's going around. It's going around, apparently. Yeah, NFL's Twitter account sent out a video thanking Big Ben for his contributions to the game. Of course they included, the only video they included was of his touchdown pass to Santonio Holmes. So we thank you for that. NFL Twitter account person. Denver Broncos, they're finalizing a deal to hire Packers offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett as their head coach. The question now, Gambo, is he bringing Aaron Rodgers and or Devontae Adams with him from Green Bay to Denver?
I just can't keep thinking about that NFC West, the NFC West quarterbacks that you just threw at me. Man.
Yo, the AFC West quarterbacks, Mahomes, Herbert.
Aaron Rodgers went there?
Yeah, if Aaron Rodgers went to the AFC West, my goodness. The Bears, meanwhile, have hired Colts defensive coordinator Matt Eberflus to be their next head coach. He was also considered a candidate for the Jags head coaching vacancy. He'll join the new GM there for a team that went 6-11 last year under Matt Nagy.
Yeah, Matt Nagy had one really good season. His first had a really great season with the Bears, and then a couple of seasons he just faltered and they decided to blow him out. Not the greatest job out there, but they do have a young quarterback that they believe has a lot of potential, so at least they'll have a young quarterback. They don't have to draft one.
And then finally, from the coaching news, the Las Vegas Raiders have requested a coaching interview with Josh McDaniels, the Patriots offensive coordinator. McDaniels is now expected to interview with the Raiders for that job. So more coaching news.
Just be careful if you're the Raiders. I mean, you could hire him and then he decides that he doesn't want the job. So just got to be careful with Josh McDaniels. You just never know. Guy goes through emotions and never really sure what he wants.
It's a little unreliable when it comes to that. But our top story
of the
day.
Are you sure you want the job? Like, are you sure you want the job? You're not going to change your mind in 24 hours, are you?
Yeah, be sure. Be sure with Josh McDaniels. You always have to be sure. Top story of the day, though.
To Conley, and that will do it. The Suns win 105-97, the final score from Salt Lake City. It's 8 straight wins for the Suns, and they are off to their best start in franchise history at 38-9 on the season.
And we could just go on and on with all the platitudes about the Phoenix Suns and what they accomplished again last night, beating the Utah Jazz again. It was another clutch time win. It was another game that was within 5 points with less than 5 minutes to go. Once again, it was Chris Paul in the fourth quarter, and once again, it was Devin Booker having one of those nights, Gambo. And it's repetitive. It never gets boring. I never get tired of it. But man, it is like all of these themes that we've talked about the Suns all year long. They keep happening game after game after game.
Yeah, and it's remarkable how well they play in these. You know, in the last five, it's interesting. The last 5 minutes of that game last night, they each scored, I believe it was 8 points. So it wasn't like the last 5 minutes they just clobbered the Jazz and went on this unbelievable run. But what they did is what they've just been doing over and over again, is they find a way to win these games. Now, sometimes they do. The differential's unreal, right? Sometimes they just blow a team out in the last 5 minutes. But this one, I mean, this was a two-point game several times. It was a two-point game. Clarkson hit two free throws. It was 92-90. Whiteside had a dunk. It was 94-92. But what the Suns found, they were able to take that game when it got down to 2 points.
Yeah.
They were able to take that and turn that into an eight-point win.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you're absolutely right. At the start of the final 5 minutes, it was a 10-point game, eight-point game. I can't remember the exact number. And the Suns had a lead. They kind of lost it because Jordan Clarkson, Hassan Whiteside, they made shots. And before you knew it, it was within 2 points close and late in that game. It was the last 3 minutes or so, the last 2.5 minutes or so, where the Suns, they 2:14 to go. They're only up two after a Hassan Whiteside dunk, 96-94, and it was after that. Chris Paul, the 10-footer. Devin Booker, the technical free throw. Devin Booker, the jumper. Bismack Biyombo with the two free throws. Right? So it was, yeah, it might have, the 5 minutes might have started the same as it ended, but within that 5 minutes, man, that was a two-point game a couple of times, and the Suns do what they always do in those moments. They just respond. And
yeah, they respond, then they respond behind Chris Paul, who always seems to make that big shot. You know, when it gets tight and you start to worry a little bit, he always seems to be that clutch guy that's going to somehow find a way to get to the elbow, knock down that jumper. And like you know, it's coming and you can't stop him. I mean, if you're the Jazz, you know, Chris Paul's going to try to get to this spot and take a shot. And somehow he always finds a way to get there.
After the game, Monty Williams, they had 9 guys last night. And Monty said, we were never that worried about that.
All I talked about before the game was hooping. Whether we have 9, 8, 9, 15, 17 two-way guys, whatever it is, like just hoop. You know, we have a scheme, we have a system. well, you can't forget to go out there and play basketball and hoop. And I thought we did a good job of that tonight. Obviously, you have to execute. You got to make, you know, stops on defense, but it always comes down to that. You got to go out there and have the confidence to hoop.
And that's what they do. That is their mantra, isn't it? Just go hoop.
Just go hoop.
What was that Chris Paul said the other night when he played 40 minutes? Hey, man, I'll hoop tomorrow if you want, right? That's like their code. That's just what they do. We're just going to go hoop. That's all we're going to do. And when you break it down, when you make it that simple, I mean, the Suns make it look so easy. You knew it was coming. You knew it was going to happen. You knew it was going to be centered around Chris Paul and Devin Booker, and it was. That was the remarkable thing about last night's game, though. Usually the Suns are about ball movement and about getting guys involved. Last night, it was very much about the superstars. It was very much about Devin Booker early. It was very much about Chris Paul late. And that ball movement that we're used to seeing from the Suns, we didn't see a lot of that last night. It was about the stars doing the things that stars do, and that's what carried them to the win.
Yeah, I mean, again, you look at the end of the first quarter, you know, Devin Book's out there with Landry Shamet, who can't make a shot, Ish Wainwright, Elfrid Payton, and Jalen Smith and Bismack Biyombo, who switched. But that's who he's on the court with. So, yeah, the ball movement wasn't great last night. Book had 4 assists. The rest of the team only had 10. So they didn't have the ball movement. They had to very much rely. It was very Book-centric. The old Devin Booker with the Suns, isolation, one-on-one, and no real ball movement, but just let Devin Booker do his thing. For 3 quarters, that's what it was like. And then in the 4th quarter, Chris Paul kind of took over and made some things happen. But what I really liked about them, too, is I liked the defense. They had 5 block shots in the first quarter.
Yeah.
5 block shots. We talked so much about their offense, but, man, their defense showed up to play last night.
Big time. Yeah, Monty said after the game that he thought their 3rd quarter defense was the sneaky thing that kind of won the game for him last night. When we come back, a few years ago, if Devin Booker didn't get his All-Star respect, fans would be screaming about it for weeks on end. Now that Book has gotten to the point where he seems comfortable with not being a starter, it feels like everybody has gotten comfortable with the point if Booker is not a starter. We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo.
When he's in a groove like that, I think our team feeds off of it. And what he's done lately, I just kind of laugh at the voting numbers when I see it at the bottom of the ticker, and so many guys are getting so many more votes than him. It's laughable when you look at what he's done, not just of late, but all season long, and the wins we have. He should be a starter on the All-Star team, and tonight was one of those games where I think he proved that point.
It was Monty Williams last night after the Suns beat the Utah Jazz for their 8th straight win to continue this best start in franchise history, as the Suns are now 38-9 on the season. They have never been better after 47 games in the history of the franchise than they are right now. And Devin Booker, along with Chris Paul, are the two guys right in the middle of all of it. And that's not to diminish or demean what Mikal Bridges has done or Cam Johnson or anything like that. But if you look at this particular 8-game winning streak, it is a lot of Chris Paul. It's a lot of Devin Booker. It's Chris Paul in the 4th quarter. It's Devin Booker, and he's averaging like 33 points per game. Today, Gambo, we're going to find out who the All-Star starters are. TNT is going to announce it. We think we're going to be on the air probably about an hour from now when it happens. We're not expecting Devin Booker to be the starter in the Western Conference. I think we both agree it would be a nice, pleasant surprise if he were, but it's also not necessarily for him to be an All-Star starter in the Western Conference. It'd be great, but it doesn't have to happen for either you or I, does it?
No, listen, we care about one thing right now, and that's a banner. We care about a championship. The accolades is just being an All-Star. He's been an All-Star twice. Doesn't matter how he got there. He was a replacement player. The first time, and then the second, I think the first time he replaced was a Dame Lillard. And I think Dame even kind of pushed for Book to get it, and he ended up being the All-Star. So he's been an All-Star 2 times, and he'll get it. He'll be an All-Star again. There's no doubt about it in my mind or your mind. He's going to be an All-Star. Whether he gets the start or not, look, I mean, when 50% of the vote goes to the fan, it's a popularity contest. We're in Phoenix, Arizona. I mean, it's unlikely. I'd like to go back and just see in the history of the Suns how many guys were voted. Now, the voting was different, right? It was different, but I'm sure they've had some starters. as all-stars over the years.
Oh, sure.
I'm sure
yeah.
Barkley was and other players were. Nash was. But for some reason, Devin Booker does not get the same respect as some of these other players. He's well-respected, but for some reason, the fan voting is not showing it for Book.
No, I just did a quick Google search, Suns to start in All-Star game, and it didn't give me the results I was looking for, so I'm going to have Eric look that up and see if he can find. But the Barkley did it for a number of years.
Yeah, Nash too, right?
Did
Nash
it for a starter. Number of years. I think Amari might have even done it for a year or two. Take your time, Eric. There's no rush for you to look it up. Look, Devin Booker.
It's happened. The point is, it's happened. The point
of course,
is that
of course.
The Suns have had all-star starters before. It is different. I mean, it's different now. 50% of the vote goes to fans, and then 25% spread between what, coaches and players? Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's 50 to fans, 25% go to players, 25% of the vote goes to media. And a lot of the reason why they did that was back until like 2017. It was all the fans, and you got some wacky guys starting in the All-Star game who never should be starting in the All-Star game.
Well,
because it was solely left up to the fans, and they changed the rules a little bit to try to put in another filter or two to make sure that somebody who was at least kind of deserving of starting in it was going to start in the game, you know?
I think Yao Ming had more votes than there were people on the planet one year.
I think you're right.
There were more
votes
for Yao Ming than there were people on the planet.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, listen, it is what it is. I'm not worried about it. I don't think about it too much. If those guys are playing in the game, I'll be happy. I'll be watching them. I think it's great. But when you have when your team's no good, you kind of look for that. You kind of get excited about that. You get to watch your guy play. I was happy to see Book play, the first year and get in the game and stuff like that. That was exciting because we hadn't seen it. But at this point now, man, you got your eyes on the prize. That prize is the championship, the NBA championship, which Phoenix has never had. So that is a hell of a lot more important than whether he starts in the All-Star game or
not. And Monty, he made his comments last night. He's stumping for his guy, as he should. That's what a good head coach will do. It's laughable that Devin Booker isn't an All-Star starter. Devin Booker, after the game, took a much more kind of calm, not that Monty lost his mind about it, but he was very rational about it. Like, hey, that's not really my goal anymore.
I mean, I appreciate it, but I'm not worried about that anymore. I'm in a different phase of my career. Like Chris said, after another game, we're worried about getting coached in the All-Star game. That's our main objective. So, we're going to keep handling business and doing what we have to do, and let the politics and the media or popularity contest figure out itself.
Besides, Devin Booker has already achieved what comes with being an all-star in this league. He's a superstar in the NBA. I mean, it's not a question anymore. It's not up for debate.
It was a question for a while.
Oh, of course, for a long while.
When they had never gone to the playoffs?
Absolutely. For a long while it was. And I'm not saying just because I watched SportsCenter last night it makes Devin Booker a superstar. But I tell you, the way they were treating him and talking about him last night on SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt, it's clear. Devin Booker is one of the superstars of this league. They put him on a pedestal like he's one of the superstars in this league because he deserves that. He's earned it. He's one of the two best players on the best team in the NBA. And he's a nightly highlight show. He's great in the clutch. He can score from just about everywhere. He's a superstar in this league. And so whether that's validated starting in the All-Star game, you're right. If it doesn't matter to Devin, and it doesn't sound like it really does, it doesn't matter to me. He's going to go. Chris is going to go. I don't know if they're going to get a third. I don't know if DeAndre Ayton has missed too many games to be that third guy on this roster, and I just don't know if there's another obvious one. But that's fine, Gambo. You get two wins away from winning an NBA championship, and man, the All-Star game has never felt so small and so insignificant as it does when you're two wins away from winning an NBA championship.
Yeah, and listen, these are just great players too, right? To sit there and say he should be ahead of Steph Curry or Ja Morant or Luka, like I mean, I understand. I mean, Klay Thompson should not have been ahead of him. That should not have happened. I don't have the latest with me. I have like one that's like a week old. What's mind-boggling is just the amount of votes other guys are ahead of him. Just the amount of votes that Steph Curry's ahead of him and Ja Morant is ahead of him and Luka Doncic is ahead of him. It was just a crazy amount of votes that these guys were ahead of him, but that's who the fans are voting for.
Yeah. All-Star starters, Eric looked it up. Amari started in 2009. Nash started in 2006. Jason Kidd started in 2000. I would have forgotten about that one. Barkley started in 93 and in 95. So they've had, you probably go back even further than that if we wanted to. They've had their share, there's no doubt. Probably not going to happen this year. But again, we'll find out today. And maybe if it's a significant enough voting among the media and the players, it'll trump the fact that the fans don't have him in right now. But if it doesn't, it doesn't. He'll get in and everything will be fine. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station, ton of news in the NFL world, and a lot of it, some of it anyway, centers around the Arizona Cardinals. Guys they might lose, guys they might keep. We'll give you an update on both next on the Burns and Gambo show.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station, Burns and Gambo.
All right, we were talking All-Star Game in the last segment. It is also the subject of today's Twitter poll question of the day. Let's turn it back over to Eric here, live from the Auction Community Studios, and get an update on our Twitter poll question of the day.
Burns and Gambo need to know Twitter poll update, presented by Sanderson Ford.
All right, Eric, what you got for us today?
We got a close one revolving around Devin Booker and the All-Star starters, and it is, what will be your level of disappointment if he is not named an All-Star starter? Three options. First one, crushed, because he just deserved it so much. Second one is, it's a letdown, but you understand because of the competition in the Western Conference. And the third one is, Book has moved on, so have I.
Book has moved on, and so have I. That's what I'm voting for. I think Gambo's in the same boat.
Same boat.
All right. Same boat.
Same boat as the audience as well. 44.6% say that Book has moved on, and so have I. 38.7%, though, say that they're crushed if he doesn't get it, which might be a little extreme. 16.7% say it's a letdown, but they understand.
We'll find out sometime in the 5 o'clock hour. TNT will make the announcement. Again, based off of the voting, we're not expecting Devin Booker to be a starter unless there's a tremendous rally by the media or by the players. I will say this, Devin Booker always, and Kellen Olsen pointed this out to me earlier, scores well among the players. He's thought very highly among his peers in the NBA. I would imagine that probably means more to him than anything else, especially knowing in the back of his mind, hey, look, no matter what they say today, starter or not, he's going to go. And if he goes, when he goes, and he's, you know, got the support of his peers, I'm sure that and the fact he's on the best team in the NBA is all that matters to him. All right, turning our attention to the NFL, and we're starting finally to see a little bit of a thawing out when it comes to the coaching process in the NFL, Gambo. There have been 9 vacancies, not a lot of progress made on any of the fronts until today. Eberflus is going to Chicago. Nathaniel Hackett is going from Green Bay to Denver. And
yeah, that one's interesting.
It is because people are wondering, okay, did Denver hire Green Bay's offensive coordinator to be their next head coach as bait on the hook to try to get Aaron Rodgers to go there? Everyone's talking about it.
He was supposed to interview with the Jaguars today, but the Broncos, you know, kind of didn't let him out of the building type of thing. So he's 42 years old. He fits the mold of that, you know, that younger, you know, offensive guy. And apparently, you know, you look at the job that he's done with Rodgers. I mean, the Packers have the second most offensive touchdowns and the fewest giveaways since he became their offensive coordinator in 2019. They have the most touchdowns and the fewest giveaways since he became their OC. And he's been their OC for a few years. So does make sense that he's in line. I remember our conversation with Michael Bidwell a few years ago. Hire the offensive guy. Always hire the offensive guy, because, if not, then somebody's going to take him away from you.
Yeah.
Good offensive coordinators get hired away. They just do. They get hired. Look at Byron Leftwich. He's about to get a job. So this is an interesting hire, because you're right. The speculation of whether Rodgers would go with them to Denver is one we're going to have our eye on for a while.
And it's not like Aaron Rodgers can choose to go to Denver. He's not a free agent. The Packers are in a position to be able to send him somewhere if that's what he wants. But if that's what's going to go down, the Denver Broncos have a young roster, one of the best defenses in the NFL, about $50 million worth of salary cap space, according to those who project that. And they've also got 11 picks in hand for April's NFL draft. So if they want to go shopping at the Green Bay Packers store and buy themselves an Aaron Rodgers for this upcoming season, they do have some assets to try to make that work. And if they could somehow pair him up with Devontae Adams, who is a free agent. Now, he might get tagged in Green Bay, so maybe he's not going anywhere. That, again, that's what everybody's speculating about. The other head coaching hire I mentioned was Matt Eberflus. He goes from the Colts as their defensive coordinator. He's now the head coach of the Chicago Bears. And you just said it a second ago. What makes this one interesting is that usually teams are kind of going offense with their head coaching hires. He's a defensive coordinator, and now everyone's trying to figure out who he's going to hire to be his offensive coordinator to make Justin Fields be the quarterback they think he can be in Chicago. Real interesting hire here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just going back to the, you know, the defense, the Lovie Smith era, doesn't have the same credentials as guys like Doug Peterson and Dan Quinn and Jim Caldwell and Brian Flores or, you know, things like that. But he's got three decades of coaching experience. Apparently, you know, he's a no-nonsense type of guy. He may not win the press conference. So, you know, I was reading one of the Chicago papers, and they said a boring business-like approach is exactly what the Bears need right now. Boring business-like approach. So if that's, you know, if that's what it is, that's what it is. So, you know, they need to the it's great when the Bears are good. When the Bears are good, it's good for the NFL.
I agree.
I'd like to see them turn it around.
Now, the coaching news took a real local slant today and in the last couple of days. And I'm going to start with the Jacksonville Jaguars because this might be a direct loss and then a direct gain for the Arizona Cardinals. The reports came out this morning that Byron Leftwich is ready to go to Jacksonville to be the Jags coach. Those reports have actually been out there for the last couple of days. The new report that came out is that Byron Leftwich not only is about to be the Jags coach, but he is trying, he's holding up the process because he wants Adrian Wilson, the VP of pro scouting with the Arizona Cardinals, and of course a legend with the Cardinals. He wants A-Dub to be his general manager with him in Jacksonville. And it sounds like he's kind of throwing a little bit of a power play on this one to try to force the current GM, Trent Baalke, out so that Adrian Wilson becomes his GM there. That becomes very interesting to watch because the Cards might lose one of Steve Keim's right-hand men over all of this.
You know, you could get a Byron Leftwich jersey on the Jaguars website, too, for $119.99.
Can you really?
Teal, white, or black. It's true. You could buy a Byron Leftwich jersey. So they're kind of popular right now with the thought that he's, you know, going to be their guy. Look, there's a lot of belief that they need to act quick. They got to lock up Leftwich. I mean, that was an absolute disaster with the Urban Meyer hire and just how bad that went. And, you know, Leftwich was a Jaguar, man. You know, you're bringing back one of your own, right? So I think that that would be a popular hire there. And I think he's earned the ability. He's been doing it. Remember, Bruce in the beginning never gave up the play calling. Well, he did with Leftwich. Calling the plays. It's just interesting that he might have the leverage to force the general manager that's probably recommending him for the job out to have his own GM in place.
I never would have thought Byron Leftwich would have had that kind of juice. You know, and good for him if he does. I never would have thought. I would have thought he'd be the guy who, you know, be so happy to be a head coach in this league, given that it's his first opportunity to do so, that he wouldn't kind of pull a power play like this.
It's an ultimatum.
But it sounds like it's an ultimatum. And if it happens for the Cardinals, yeah, they'll lose Adrian Wilson. Yeah, that won't be a lot of fun because he obviously plays a valuable role with Steve Keim in the front office of that building. It also means draft picks for the Cardinals. There's a rule that if a team loses a minority assistant coach or loses a minority personnel executive, that team will receive third-round compensatory picks in each of the next two drafts.
Okay, now I want him to go.
Now I want him to go.
I'm going to lose my assistant GM? Okay, I'm fine. And I get two third-round picks?
Yeah, you get a third-rounder in 2022, a third-rounder in 2023. That's a pretty nice gig for the Cardinals if that's what you get. That's not a bad deal.
Yeah, I'll do that. I mean, I don't know about you, but do you agree? I mean, I would take that.
Oh, yeah, I would take that. I think A-Dub, you know, I had always wondered if A-Dub was being groomed to be the next general manager of the Arizona Cardinals if and when something ever happened to Steve Keim. And so in the back of my mind, losing Adrian Wilson becomes one of those, I don't know if I want to see him go, because if ever it came to the day where they had to make a replacement at general manager for the Cardinals, you might have a guy in-house that you trust because he's a forever Cardinal. So watching him walk out the door makes me a little uncomfortable, but since it doesn't seem like that day is coming anytime soon, if you can get a couple of third-round picks for him on his way out the door, then all the power to you for that
one. And
speaking of Leftwich, he is really playing the game because now there's a report that he's got an interview scheduled with the New Orleans Saints as well.
Him and Aaron Glenn, I think.
Yeah.
They requested the interviews with those two assistants, Aaron Glenn and Byron Leftwich. So now it's being reported that he is going to take that interview?
I've only seen that they've requested permission, but it's almost like by the way, just so you know, if you don't give me the GM that I want, I could very easily go over here, you know.
Or I'll just wait a year. I mean, Bruce Arians is as old as dirt. I'll wait for Bruce to retire. Bruce says he's coming back for one more year. I'll wait for Bruce to retire, and then I'll take over in Tampa because I'm sure they would love to have him in Tampa Bay
as
their head coach.
If Adrian Wilson leaves, it may be that Vance Joseph is staying. Ian Rappaport reported today three names expected to get second interviews from the Dolphins. Vance Joseph is not among the names listed. It's Cowboys offensive coordinator Kellen Moore, Niners offensive coordinator Mike McDaniel, and the guy who is now presumed to be the favorite for the job, Bills offensive coordinator Brian Daboll. There's no listing of Vance Joseph's name here. There are reports that the Dolphins are very happy with their defense and don't want to make a lot of changes there. It could, if you add it all up, Gambo, very much mean that Vance Joseph is not going anywhere and is going to be the defensive coordinator next year.
Probably. And keep your eye on this. This is in the New Orleans paper right now. Former Saints coach Sean Payton says he has heard back-channel interest from two NFL teams.
Of course he has.
Of course.
Of course he has.
Back-channel interest. Because, you know, you got to do it the right way. You can't. I'm sure it's really not back channel, but you got to do it the right way because he's still under contract there.
it's some owner picking up the phone and calling Sean Payton and saying, okay, Sean, we're talking on the back channel here. Hey, what would it take for you to come here? How much would I have to pay you? How many draft picks would I have to give up? We talked about this yesterday. It's going to be a first-round pick. You're going to have to give up a first-round pick. And you know what? He might be worth it. He might be worth it when it's all said and done.
I mean, you said it yesterday, right? The Raiders received two first-round picks, two second-round picks, and $8 million in cash from Tampa Bay to get Gruden back in 2002.
And it worked. He won a Super Bowl
there. Two firsts, two seconds, and $8 million.
Yep. It was reported earlier today that the Coyotes are close to agreeing to a deal with ASU to use their new arena as a temporary home for the team until they figure out their permanent home. What does it mean? How is it going to work? How much is it going to cost? And is it going to happen? Gambo's got some answers and insight, and we'll talk about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo.
Maybe, as we welcome you back into the Burns and Gambo Show, we're live from the Auction Community Studios here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Maybe the most interesting story today, because it's hard to know how to feel about it, and we'll explain in a minute, is this Coyote story. And stop me if you've heard this one before. We've got a story about the Coyotes and where they're going to play hockey. I know that's been a running theme of this organization for the better part of the last decade and a half, but we've got a story about where the Coyotes might be playing for the next few years, and it might surprise you. It might take you back a little bit. You might try to figure out the logistics and how exactly it's going to work. Gambo, what do you know about whether the Coyotes are going to play at ASU's yet-to-be-finished 5,000-seat arena in Tempe? What do you know about this?
This has been the option for them for several months. They did not want it to get out. A lot of people were writing about it was going to be the Veterans Memorial Coliseum. It was never going to be the Veterans Memorial Coliseum. They've been focused on ASU for several months now. Several months. One of the things, I think one of their first choices was honestly Chase Field. And the reason why is that would have been perfect for them. But there are a lot of events scheduled at Chase Field, and the cost of putting the ice in, taking it out, putting it in, taking it out. You know, if you got the ice in, but then they've got an event coming up, then you got to take it out. Then you got to put it back in, and then you got to take it out because there's another event coming. And then you got to put it back in. That cost was just too astronomical. It was just too expensive, millions of dollars each time. So They just couldn't. They couldn't do that. So that wasn't going to be an option. So Chase was kind of ruled out a while ago. They were focusing on ASU. I heard about this several months ago. Part of what they're going to have to do is they're going to have to spend. I heard about $10 million for the locker rooms because they need NHL style locker rooms. They can't use the college locker rooms. So that would have to go into it. Plus a lot of other investments too. There's a lot of things that they would have to upgrade to meet the NHL standards that you don't have in a college arena. But that's what they're focused on. And I do think, and I will say this, okay, I think that it does show a commitment to stay here when you start to see things about them wanting to play there for 2 or 3 years until they can get a deal done. It's not like, you know, they're talking about several years being there until they can get arena done. I don't think that shows that they want to leave and that they want to bolt, because if they did, you'd hear about something that was temporary for 1 year, or they would just go.
Yes. You're right, but at some point, how much becomes too much? And what I mean by that, how many more signs do you need that maybe it's just not going to work out for you here? I agree with you. It does. I mean, it does speak to their level of commitment of wanting to stay here, that to be willing to play for 3 or 4 years inside of a building that is, what, one-third, you know, less than one-third of what a typical NHL arena would seat, and doesn't have nearly the amenities, doesn't have nearly the suite capacity, doesn't have anything really that a typical NHL, you know, facility would have, other than a sheet of ice and a few seats for some fans to sit on. So I agree with you. It does kind of speak to this, hey man, we want to be here so badly, we're going to go play in a 5,000 seat arena for the next 3 years until we can figure our stuff out. And that's great. But at some point, You start looking at this mounting evidence of, man, is this really going to work here long term? Is this really going to be how this is going to end for them? And I'm not saying this is it, but I can see why for some people they might look at it and go, man, you're going to go play at a 5,000 seat arena. Maybe you should kind of read the tea leaves on this one and start thinking about other things other than Phoenix, Arizona, because that is, for some, that's going to be a very desperate move by the organization to go play there for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, now the Coyotes, they can't confirm or deny or talk anything specifically until there's a vote on it. You know, when that happens, then we'll get more information. So it's going to be on the ASU board agenda, and so it's going to be public. So that's what's going to happen. It's going to be on that ASU board agenda. It'll become public, and then, you know, there'll be a vote on it and things like that. So
yeah,
I think it's the last option, like in many ways, as to where to play, because again, Chase Field doesn't work, the Coliseum doesn't work. So in many ways, like this is it. Like this is they have to make this work.
If you don't mind me, have you heard? And not that I'm hung up on this. Have you heard specifically why the Coliseum wouldn't work? Is there a particular issue you're aware of?
I know Chase was at the top of their list of thinking that Chase could really work. And then again, the logistics of it with all the dates and the events and everything like that, you know, just didn't make it work. And the cost of the ice in and ice out. I have not heard on why the Coliseum wouldn't work. I don't know. I mean, I used to play there. I used to play ice hockey there.
I know you did.
I played in leagues
there. And for people who don't, okay, maybe you haven't been paying that much attention to the Coyotes, the reason why this is a thing is that they have been booted out of their Glendale home, Gila River Arena. This is the last year they're playing there. The city of Glendale announced their intentions at the beginning of the season that this is the last year. They've informed the Coyotes this is their last year. And so while they work to find a permanent home here in the Valley, and there's been a lot of talk of a Tempe location, they're going to need some place to play next year because Glendale is not an option for them to play next year. And that's why they're searching like this. Now, I will admit to you, and maybe you know more about this than I do, I have lost track of the Tempe situation. I don't know where that stands. I don't know whether that's trending good or trending bad for the Coyotes. I would have to think, to your point, they don't pursue this thing with ASU unless they believe there's a better than decent chance they would be able to build in Tempe at the site they want to go to. But I have not... I'm pleading ignorance on this one. I have not really checked in on that as of late to know whether there's legit optimism about whether they're going to end up in Tempe full time or not. I don't know where that stands right now.
I think it's. I think they got a vote on it, right? I think that's the last I heard was that they've got to have a vote on it. Like it has to be approved for them to get that arena there. So I think in the meantime, they're very focused on just making sure they have a place to play next year because it's not going to work in Glendale anymore, which they would have preferred to just stay there and, you know, play that out for another couple of years. But, you know, Glendale's got all these other ideas that they believe is going to make them more money. And the second they found out that the Yotes wanted to leave Glendale, they're like, we're not going to help you anymore. You keep telling us you're going to leave and we want to say, you know, so they felt that there was other ways that they can, is there a professional bull riding or something crazy I read the other day that they're going to do in Glendale? Just stuff that they're going to do to try to make, you know, they think they can make more revenue on. We'll see whether that's possible or not. But I think the Tempe thing, it's just about a vote. I think they got to see if they can get it approved. If not, then I don't know what would happen. I don't know what their option would be if Tempe decides they're not going to go that direction.
Yeah, or if either Tempe decides they're not going to go in that direction, or if, as you say, ASU decides they're not going to go in the direction to allow the Coyotes to use that space, then you really start to you're out of options.
Talking 4 years before an arena would be built.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to take a while.
There's no shovel in the ground. Now, we're in 2022. There's no shovel in the ground. You know, so
you'd be playing in front of 5,000 fans for the better part of the next three or four years.
Yeah, but here's what they could sell. Here's what they could sell. They could sell that every seat is a lower bowl seat. There's no upper bowl seats. Every seat's going to be a great seat. Every single seat's going to be a great seat. They could charge a premium for them because they're all great seats. Now, you don't have the luxury suites, but, you know, they're not selling a whole lot of luxury suites anyway. So that's the thing that you could sell. You could sell that every seat in that place is going to be a premium seat to watch, you know, an NHL level hockey at a high level. So I think they could charge more. They would obviously take a hit revenue wise, right? But if you're charging more for those lower level seats than you're charging for upper bowl seats in Glendale, you might be able to make some of that up but the price point might be a little bit higher.
When we come back, some teams just pass the eye test. Some teams seem good on paper. In reality, they're not that good. Phoenix Suns, whether it's on paper, whether it's on the hardwood, whether it's with their eyes, or whether it's the numbers, they are the best team in the NBA, and every single night they are backing it up. And we'll tell you how and why next on the Burns and Gambo Show.